Hello, my name is Otis, and I'm with the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. With me today is Chris Olson, co-owner of Treasure Island. And we have a few questions for him. Number one, what was your first job, Chris?
My first job was actually sorting papers for my dad here at Treasure Island. So back then, we were in West Acres, down in the basement. And he would have so much business happening, so many deals going on, that he'd have all these different papers everywhere around his desk. And I wanted to hang out with Dad and help him somehow. And so he'd say, okay, Chris, go through and pick up all these different papers over here, and then I want you to alphabetize them. And so I would do that based on the name of whoever the person was that sent the invoice or the paper, and I'd get them into stacks. And then I'd put them into folders that had that person's name on it. So I could save him a lot of time and make sure that everything was organized and sorted by date. And so, yeah, that's how I got started. I think I was probably, maybe 6 or 7 years old back when I was sorting papers for my dad.
Did you get paid doing it or not?
Yeah, he would give me, you know, a couple bucks to go play some video games over at Pirate's Den, because we had Pirate's Den in the mall back then, and so the big arcade games where you could pop the quarters in and
up, down, left, right, A, B, start.
Oh, that was Nintendo.
No, that's Konami.
Yeah, that's Konami, who made the game on the Nintendo system. So you're talking about Contra. Up, up, down, down, left, right, left,
30 lives. Lives.
Yeah, Contra. So that's a great game. I loved Contra. But yeah, I spent a lot of time playing video games. And that's how I got so smart.
You just made the Galaga sound when you die. You did that.
Well, that's good. That's good.
How do you make money with gold?
So the way that we make money with gold, a lot of people think that we buy gold when it's a low price and then we sell it when it's a higher price. But that's not what we do. That would actually be called speculating. And we don't speculate at all. What we do is we purchase gold from refineries and mints and other people who have gold or silver that they want to sell. And when we do it, we simultaneously sell it in a paper market, and that's called a hedge. So if I buy gold for $1,300, if I buy 100 ounces of gold for $1,300, I'll simultaneously sell 100 ounces of gold for $1,300 on paper on a market like the COMEX. And then the price of gold, if it's going up or it's going down, I'm protected from that movement in price. And so where we make our money is what we call it's on the spread. So if we have, say, a 10-ounce gold bar and the price of gold is $1,300, I might be buying gold at $10 per ounce over the price of gold, and then I'm selling it for $20 over the price of gold. So I'm making $10 on a $13,000
profit. Bar. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not a lot of profit. The gold industry is very, very competitive at our level because our major business is wholesale. So we distribute gold all over the country. And so we have a very, very thin profit margin, and it requires us to manage the risk and to hedge and use derivatives and different instruments. So it's pretty complicated. Not a lot of people know how to do it that way.
What is the coolest thing you've bought or sold or found from a metal detector at Treasure Island?
Well, the coolest thing that we've bought or sold, man, it's been so many things.
Or found.
Well, my dad has found ancient Celtic gold coins. He found a Roman gold signet ring that was used by a Roman official to stamp a wax seal for the envelopes that he would send to other people. So my dad has a gold ring with a wax seal, or with a signet ring that is used for stamping. My dad has found a papal bulla in a ancient Roman battlefield in England. And so that was a big lead seal that the Pope would use to seal a communication that he was sending somewhere else to some other country. And so my dad found one of those buried in the ground.
It was lead?
Yeah, it's a lead seal. It was lead, yep.
Yeah, it's painted poisonous.
Lead. Yeah, lead is, you got to watch out for lead. So he's found lots of cool stuff, and we buy all kinds of cool things. Right now we have two sterling silver elephants with real ivory tusks.
I want an elephant.
That they're probably 20 or 30 years old, but they're big silver elephants, and we're trying to figure out what to do with them because they're worth some money. But we always find cool stuff here. I can't even begin to remember how many cool things we've bought and sold.
Do you deal with Pokemon cards? Because they can be worth a lot of money.
No. We used to deal with cards back in the 80s and the 90s. That was a big thing that Treasure Island was known for. Kids from all over Fargo would come to Treasure Island to buy their baseball cards.
Oh.
And other cards. Even your dad. Even your dad.
He was here?
He would come and buy cards, and everybody in town came to Treasure Island for sports cards. But with the internet, once the internet came out, it made it very difficult to make any money on cards. And pretty soon we were finding out that our wholesale distributor was selling us boxes of cards for more than it would cost us to go on eBay and buy them ourselves. So why would our customers want to come in and buy cards
that are more than the price of what then they can, yeah.
Exactly. So like Amazon and eBay basically wiped out all the little card shops all over the country. So you don't see many anymore. So we got out of the card business in 2001. That was when we finally said, oh, we're done.
Because I've been on the internet and looked at all these card prices, and I've been looking at Pokemon cards, and there's a card for 5 cents. And yeah. Why would you go to a store and buy cards for $5 when you could just get it off eBay?
Yeah, but there are some cards shops like Paradox downtown. They sell.
I'm a customer there. I go there about every week.
Yep, so that's cool.
What advice do you have for young kidpreneurs like me?
Young kidpreneurs, well, question everything. Never assume that you know what you think you know, and take advice from other people, but you always want to be trying to understand the whole picture. So when somebody's teaching you something, they're giving you a little piece of a puzzle, and you got to try to fit it in with other pieces of the same puzzle, and you're trying to create a picture of the world for yourself. And so that's what I've done all my life, is just take little things, and sometimes you'll get a puzzle piece that doesn't fit anywhere, but you just got to take it and put it somewhere and wait until you find other pieces to put together. Yep. And also, you know, don't think about like, well, I'm going to go to college, and that's the magic pill that will get me a good life and a good job in the future. You have to think about, why would I go to college? What career would I want to go into? And then you also have to think, is the career that I want to go into, is it something that people need? Is there a demand for it in society? Or am I just going to be throwing money down a hole to get a degree that gets me a job at McDonald's? So you got to really understand the world and try to find, you know, what am I good at and how can I help other people? Because in the end, being an entrepreneur means that you are delivering a service that people need, that people want. And that's how you make money. That's how you get rewarded for doing something that other people want. So you have to think about what is lacking in the world and what can I do to give people a service that they're not being given or do it better.
Yeah. Yep. I'm going to get a high school diploma and make calendars with kitties on them.
You could do that. I hear there's a lot of demand for those.
I don't think so, but... How important is giving back to your community?
Oh, very important. Because for me, family is the first and most important thing. I have 5 children that we homeschool. And family is, the family unit is really the root of civilization. So I'm a very traditional sort of person when it comes to that sort of thing. And a lot of people think that life could be reduced to just markets and money and profit margins. And so for a lot of people, that's what motivates them. But business and markets and money, those things are there to serve people who come first. People come first, families come first, communities come first. And so we all have a life together to enrich one another as human beings who love each other and protect one another and serve one another. And so that's really the ultimate purpose. And so giving back, how do we do that here? We pay people a very fair wage. We pay people more than we could pay them. You know, we could get away with paying them less, but we want to pay them more. We like to see our employees happy. If they have a family emergency or they just need some time off, we're going to do that. So we're all kind of a big family here. And so we take care of each other and we care about each other. And so that's how we give back.
I have two little side questions.
Sure.
One, how much vacation days do you allow your employees? And two, if one of your kids was in danger, would you trade this whole place to save him?
Oh, yeah. I would take a bullet for my kids.
Yeah.
If somebody said, you know, you get to make the choice. You're going to die right now, or your son's going to die.
You die, your son lives.
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, take me right now. No questions asked. Absolutely. So yeah, if I would pay any price to make the world a right place, and if that, and especially with my children and my family, yeah, I would give up anything. How much time off do we give our people? It depends on how much time they work. We've got part-time people, we've got full-time people, but typically we like to see our people get at least 2 weeks, if not 4 weeks.
2 weeks consecutive? Or?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, or they can split it up any way they want. Me, I don't get any vacation.
Wah, wah, wah.
'Cause I'm the boss. But I need to take a vacation.
Just burden your dad with it.
Yeah.
Say, Dad, I'm taking a vacation. Bye. See you in 2 weeks.
Well, that's a nice thing is that's what my dad gets to do. He gets to come and go as he pleases now. So that's the other reason I'm here, so that my dad can relax and be retired and do things that are fun. So he's put in his time, and so now I'll pick up the slack and make it so that he can retire in peace and feel like everything's taken care of.
Sure got a nice retirement fund here. So.
Yeah, we do all right.
How was Treasure Island started?
Treasure Island was started, well, my dad, when he was your age, had a paper route in Kindred. And so he would be delivering papers to all the different people in the town, and they would be paying him with coins, and I don't know what the subscription price was, but he'd go along and collect everybody's subscriptions. And he would go through the coins that they gave him, and he collected coins at the time. And so he would pick out the rare ones and replace it with common ones. And then he would turn the money into the newspaper people, and they weren't looking for rare coins, so they didn't care. They just wanted their nickels and their pennies and their dimes. But he would select out the good ones and collect coins. And so his love of coins led him into a love of metal detecting. And so he did a lot of metal detecting when he was a young man. And so he could find rare coins just laying in the dirt. And so that became a really big hobby for him. And he would go around doing that everywhere he could. He would look up where an old school used to be in 1895, but today it's just a farm field. And he'd go metal detecting in that farm field and find all kinds of stuff or go to a park. And so in his 20s, he opened up a shop called Treasure Island, and it was a metal detector store. It wasn't even a coin store at first. And slowly, he began to accumulate an inventory of coins because people that come in looking for metal detectors,
trade them in.
They would bring coins and say, hey, do you want to buy these coins? And he'd say, well, sure, why not? Yeah, I'll buy your coins. Or then they'd say, hey, do you have any of these coins that I need? Well, I happen to have some coins that I just bought 2 days ago, and here, now he can make a profit. He can sell them for a little bit more than he bought them for.
So if he buys them for $5, he could sell them for $5.50 or $6.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's profit, and take his $50 or $1.
Right, and profit is just the market's way of rewarding you for providing a service. And so, yeah, so he would do that, and it just grew from there. Then it got into gold and silver and more rare coins, and just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then 1980 happened, and in 1980, the price of silver shot up to $50 an ounce.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, it was just a parabolic move. We've got some charts right there. You can see what happened to the price of gold right there, actually. If you look there in 1980... You see, 800 there, but look what it went up from $100 to $800. So you had an 800% price increase.
$30.
Yeah, and that's...
To $1,200.
Yep, and so...
That is amazing.
So when that happened, that little thing right there on the chart, Treasure Island was in the basement of the mall, and there were people coming from all over the state with their gold and their silver to sell him. And... I think my dad worked 12 or 14-hour days every day for about a half a year. He couldn't stop buying gold and silver from... There were lines out the door, up the stairs, and down the hall.
There were stairs?
It was in the basement of the mall. So, and I remember being a kid, walking around and just looking at these lines of people, and my mom was there, and my dad was there, and they were just paying out money and buying gold and silver, and he'd be driving down to Minneapolis to the refinery to send it into the melters, and it was just nonstop. And so we got a really, really good start from 1980, and it's just continued on. You can see that what the prices have done, and so it's a fun business.
Nice. I have two more questions for you.
Okay.
So when he buys the coins, he spends money on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then why does he take it down to Minneapolis to put it in the refinery?
Well, back then? Well, because he had to get his money back. So he has to refill his bank account with cash. So, you know, say he had a couple $100,000 and everybody came in all day, and pretty soon he's run out of money. He's got a pile of gold and silver and no more money to buy anymore. So he's maxed out. And there's more people that want to buy and sell gold and silver tomorrow. So he's got to go get that cash back. So he's got to take it to the next level up in the marketplace to sell it to somebody else who's buying it. And so you have a big chain of demand and exchange for the metal. And so he had to go exchange his for cash, and now he's got his cash again so he can buy more from the people that are bringing it.
What was my second question? Oh yeah, what did they do with the gold?
They were selling it to other investors in the marketplace. So the reason that people were buying gold and silver at that time is they thought that the US dollar was going to collapse, because the dollar it's just a paper note.
Somebody can counterfeit them really easy, but they can't counterfeit gold really easy, right?
Well, that's part of it. Even if you had paper money that nobody could counterfeit, what happens if you double the amount of it tomorrow? Or triple the amount of it? If you just keep making more of the same paper money, it means everybody who has that paper money, it's getting lower in value. Like a 5-cent Pokemon card, why is it only worth 5 cents? Because there's so many of them, it's so common.
But when you get them, and after about 12 years, it'll be worth more than that.
So imagine you had a $100 Pokemon card, right?
I have about a $2,000 Pokemon card.
Why is it worth $2,000?
Because it's a first edition holo 1995 card.
It's rare. How many of those do you think there are?
Right now?
Yeah.
In the world? 5,000.
5,000, okay. What if somebody made 5 million more of them? What do you think would happen to the value of your Pokemon card?
It would drop. It would be
about 5 cents.
But they couldn't make another one of it because it...
But let's just say they had a magic machine and they were able to do it. So that's why people were afraid of the dollar, because of inflation. People were making more and more and more dollars to fund U.S. government debt. And so when the government is spending more than it takes in, it prints money to make up the difference. And the more money that you print, the less everybody's money is worth, which causes prices to rise, and that's called monetary inflation.
So if there's not a lot of money being printed, then everything would be about a dollar. That's why in like the 1980s, everything was like 25 cents, right?
Exactly.
That's called not a lot of money was being printed.
Monetary inflation, exactly. And if the money supply contracts, then prices go down. That's called deflation.
Well.
Yep.
Well, thank you for your time, Chris.
Sure.
You're welcome. Mr. Olson, Chris.
Yes. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.